Welcome to Story Breakers, a show where we come up with a brand new film idea every single episode.
And if you like it, it's yours.
I'm your host, Chris Brennan.
And I'm Stephen Ryan.
Stevie, what are we doing today?
Today we are doing a
pitch battle.
Actually, I might just leave that in, that part.
Okay.
Yeah, there's like about a 40% chance that I'm actually going to do a proper intro.
Great. So basically, we came up with this new idea that we wanted to do, which was to change the format of the show every once in a while. And instead of doing one storyline all the way through, myself and Stevie will individually come up with different storylines, and then we'll battle it live on air.
But Christopher, how will we judge what's the best one if it's only the two of us pitching each other pitches?
I don't know. We probably need to have an individual with amazing insight into the storylines and who just has a sexy velvet voice.
Wow, I think I know just the person.
Yeah, I think so too.
Mr. Nice Button. I mean, Niall Bruton.
Hello.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to hear more of this velvet voice, you will find it on the live readings as he is the narrator of such amazing storylines as George Miller's Justice League Mortal.
Yes.
That live reading. We did the original Star Wars first draft.
That was fantastic.
Live reading.
Batman versus Superman.
By the original Kevin Walker.
Yeah. Star Trek.
The unaired episode.
Yes.
And most recently, without a break, J.J. Abrams' Superman flyby. Yeah. Live script reading. And you can find all of those on the podcast back catalog.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. Yeah. I'm popping my cherry today.
Excellent. The first podcast, isn't it?
Yes, ever.
Oh, wow.
In the world.
And not going to be your last.
No, so this is a worldwide exclusive for the Story Breakers.
It's not as glamorous as you imagine, is it?
It's a nice, it's okay.
It's a good cave.
It's got nice views. It's cool.
I know, it's weird to have a view in caves.
It's a skylight.
That's what that echo is.
Okay, so we basically put it out there today that we wanted to pick, similar to our Story Breakers game, mm-hmm. where you come up with a film idea and you kind of pick a genre and you pick a character and an occupation and stuff. We decided we were going to do a futuristic crime film or a futuristic detective film or a futuristic noir film. They all kind of tie in. So you can choose, basically, come up with an idea. It has to be set in the future and it has to be like a detective mystery kind of thing. So I went off and came up with my own idea. Stephen Ryan here.
Allegedly brought up his own idea. I am playing fast and loose here, guys.
And we're going to then pitch it to our judge, Niall Bruton, right now. And then we'll discuss it a little bit as well. So we'll kind of flesh it out amongst each other. Niall will choose the winner. And we have to figure out what the loser gets, right?
Yeah, well, see, the thing is, I reckon that we're going to add up the scores after a couple of pitch battles. And the loser, maybe out of 10, will have a little bit of a forfeit.
Okay.
Yeah, so stay tuned to Facebook for that one. Okay, right. I think Christopher Brennan should go first. I am that gentlemanly, like.
Okay, so you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Niall, I'm going to treat you like you're the head of a studio. And you've brought me into a room, and you're like...
Bring it on, damn it!
If I have to pee once in your pitch, I'm not getting made. Yeah, so basically you told me in advance, come up with a film. It has to be set in the future, and it has to be detective. So this is what I have. So
more.
I come in the door. Hello, sir. Okay, so you ready for this? Okay, set in the... after a devastating virus eradicates most of the population on Earth, a group of survivors huddle together onto a cruise ship and they make their way into the open water. So we're talking only like 43 people, and they, for months and months, they have to survive on their own. And not only survive on their own, because if they die, then it's the extinction of the human race. So it's a bunch of strangers they've never really met, and they all have different various jobs, like different backgrounds and things like that. And it's really scary for them because they don't even know if they're going to make it to the end of the month. But there's one glimmer of sunshine that comes through whenever a woman finds out she's pregnant. So it's like, wow, like there's actually, this is exactly what we need to have to rebuild the species, you know? So they have this little party in the ballroom and they're talking to the doctor and, oh my God, like this is going to be great. But right after that, people start disappearing. Little by little, like people start disappearing. And then there's this ex-cop on the boat who they actually go to start investigating it and to figure out if, to find out one, what happened, and two, if it's somebody doing this, stop them. So that's the film idea. What do you think, sir?
Oh, shit. Don't make my opinion sway your judgment on this.
Okay, well, you lose.
I like it.
I like it a lot. So it all takes part on this boat, on this ship?
Yeah, on this ship. I wouldn't say it's a massive cruise ship, but it has to be big enough that people can move in and out, because you want that, I don't know where you've been. It's that untrustworthiness of the thing where people don't know who's the alien or not.
Yeah.
And it really works best if people aren't around each other at all times.
Mm. But still, they're still... I like the idea of the kind of containment.
They're isolated.
Yeah.
And because there's only 43, every life matters.
Mm.
If people start disappearing, it's like, we have to contain this. Is it somebody, or is it like the virus got us and people are falling off the boat? Because I like the idea of like, they could have fell off the boat. It's this element of, say, Jaws, where it's like, well, it might not have been a shark because it's in the open water. Which I'd say if we're going forward, there is a killer. And you'd want to keep going forward with that. But that's the idea.
Is it totally set on the ocean?
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
100%. I mean, you can
is
highlight...
Kevin Costner in it?
he has gills.
His name is Gil.
His name is Gil.
I don't know, as long as you cast like the ex-cop as Bruce Willis, I'll give you the money.
Okay.
So it's an upside down sign is what we're going forward of ours.
Yeah, it's kind of like Cluedo. Post-apocalyptic Cluedo.
John McClane is stuck in a boat. Christmas Eve.
But yeah, so I really like the notion of it. A notion on the ocean, I would say. There's a lot you can do with it, too. I mean, I'd say you'd want to have, say, when I was expanding it slightly, I thought it'd be really interesting if the doctor was the first person to go missing. So it's like, oh my God, we're having a baby. You can have this conversation between the new, soon-to-be mother and the doctor. And she's like, thank God you're here, you know, because I don't know what I'll do. And the next day, the doctor's nowhere to be found. Because we've set up the fact that this doctor is important. And I'd even go so far as to later on have the pregnant woman herself go missing. Because that's devastating.
Yeah.
Like, that's like, if someone's doing this, they're psychotic.
That was a twofer.
Yeah, they're like, this is a two-for-one plum special, you know? But like, it is, and the audience, I don't think, would expect us to take out the pregnant mom. Because you're saying that there's no rules here.
Yeah, well, there's the glimmer of hope. There's the light at the end of the tunnel.
What's
yeah.
the twist at the end, though? Is the twist like the baby killed them all?
I don't know.
Or like, what is, like, do you know what this virus is or what this thing that has...
Well, it was funny because when you come up with this stuff, it was like, is it a zombie thing?
Yeah.
Is it even, like, is it a war thing that people blew up each other and the air, like... In the end, the funny thing is, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, it's sciencey, that stuff.
Yeah, but I do think that in the final drafts, you can find a way to work that out. I think that it would be really interesting to pull it into something around the virus. I don't think that would be the issue. I think that could be one of the fears that they have. Because, again, to go back to the thing, one of the real fun elements would be that when you're following this detective, going around interviewing people, you have people who've never met each other, really. They're only getting to know each other. So they start panicking, rumors start circulating, they start accusing each other of things, and I think you definitely have to have a scene where the detective walks down one of the hallways, hears a scream, there's a woman there with torn clothes, somebody went after her, and they're like, is that the killer, or is it just somebody panicking going, well, it's all coming to an end. So you can have like a lot more going on than just one detective interviewing people. Like, there's this whole pandemonium on a boat, and as I said, every life matters on this boat. And one by one, they're getting picked off.
Any casting ideas? The paint pictures in their heads?
I was thinking the detective. I like Viggo Mortensen. I thought like a good solid kind of... I thought if you wanted to make him a good character, you don't want just, I'm an ex-cop. So it's like, you'd want to give him like a weathered kind of, there's a reason I quit this, the force. And now they're asking him to do it here. But he's like, you know what? I'm not that guy anymore. Like, something bad happened in his life. You know, build like a backstory for him as to why he doesn't feel like he'd be the one to do this. Because this isn't just any other case. This is the only case that matters. And he's like, I can't really. So I think somebody like that who has like a good weathered face, a great voice, is a bit older, because you don't want like a spunky kid on the beat looking it up, you know?
Holmes Jr., yeah.
Michael Cera.
Awkwardly, like, interrogating.
I can't swim.
So, did you kidnap the people? Or whatever, you don't have to tell me. It doesn't matter.
Why are you looking at me funny like that?
I also think you'd have a lot of fun to explore, like, the different ideas of... You know, say this thing where, like, if it's in a zombie world, I saw this one meme before where there's this guy on a on top of a car shooting a horde of zombies, and there's an arrow pointing to him going, what you think you'd be in a zombie apocalypse, and then another arrow pointing to the middle of the crowd, what you'd actually be in a zombie apocalypse. It's like, yeah, we never think of ourselves as the victim here. So in a futuristic world where it's like you're 30 people on a boat, they're not all going to have like perfectly slotted jobs, like the doctor, the cop. Yeah. Like, I would love to see like the politician or the artist or like somebody who has like no qualifications that can actually help in this. The politician could be like, I'm taking charge. Why are you taking charge? Well, I have leadership skills. No, you know how to get elected by people. Like, you know how to politic. Yeah. That's not leadership. You know, like, and you actually have these debates going on.
You know how to lie, and we're trying to find a killer here, so technically you're the first one that I'll be looking at.
And I think that he would be great if the politician did.
Also, you could have Donald Trump on the button. Like, he's the first person that dies or goes missing, and nobody cares. Nobody pays. Like, you know, or like, he like eventually somewhere, like,
I will die tremendous. Out of the most amazing death, I swear, the most amazing death.
So but nobody pays attention to the first person that misses. Like, good. You know, give her the
hand. I don't want to be on this boat. Why not? Get off and swim. I can't swim. My hands are too small.
Yeah. So
just fall right off.
Now, I was trying to figure out the end of this, but that's really complicated.
Yeah.
And you know, like, in fact, I've tried to write a few mysteries and noir things in my day, and they're always like the toughest for me because it's so complicated coming up with a tangible, satisfying ending. It's like when you watch a horror film and you don't want to go cheap on the ending, but you have to either say it's a ghost and people go, oh yeah, that's what you said it was.
It's a ghost.
Or it's a person and that's a flat letdown. So it's difficult to come up with. So I was trying to think, what would it be? You know, I think it has to be an emotional kill. Somebody should be killing these people because of emotions rather than logic. It's not like, oh, she actually had a virus and he's saving it. I think it'd have to be like, we've introduced the pregnancy, so that could be sex related, and you can have like, well, over the past couple of months these two people have been having an affair, like he's actually like a person's out for revenge. I think it's really interesting when there's only 43 people in the world that somebody is getting revenge. That shouldn't really be there.
If seven didn't do it, the commandments would have been amazing, or the, you know, the slot and the gluttony,
yeah,
and all
that's
that.
True.
Like, you know, that would have been fantastic.
I guess what's cool about it is like,
oh, that's a really good idea actually. They go the religious angle because it's the end of the world. That's really nice.
Fuck, why am I helping him?
So you can have then, maybe the killer would be like a religious person, where the person who's walking around the whole time talking about like how God's will and purpose, not too heavy because you'd immediately think is that psycho.
Yeah.
But it would be the person who's trying to like congregate the sheep together. And it's like, you know, we are the shepherd of the herd, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, bringing it back to like, this is the rapture, you know? Yeah. Like, you know, we all have to follow these certain paths and stuff. But maybe then you could have like an atheist or someone of a different religion. Like,
has to be Vigo, doesn't it?
You're going against them.
I
but
agree.
You know what I mean?
Lost
so then, you know, so then, you know, they become divided then.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it is like a battle of the religion or the beliefs, and then like kind of the boat.
No, let's swing his hands.
I'm swinging my hands.
It's all
the boat just starts swinging its hands. But like, no, you get a division then of like there's 43 people. So there's like, you know, 21 and a half on each side.
It's true. And you know what?
Half the baby.
I like that.
There was this thing, like if we actually did an episode for this idea and we carved it out, it would be pretty cool to actually write a script on that, because this is something that set in the future you can do low budget and you can actually do this yourself if you just got yourself like a ship, if you like, and maybe
just
a yacht,
get,
you know?
To go to the set where they made Poseidon and just turn the boat upside down and you're fine.
But you're like, you can right if you wanted to do this on like a lower budget, you could just have a boat, or you can have like a land. It doesn't necessarily need to be the water. I just like the isolation of that. But you're talking about a handful of people, and you're like, well, that's really manageable. Now you can have the others you don't really meet. 43 people is not that many. You can have the crew of the shoot walking around the background, you know?
I like the...
But you're like, that's a doable film idea.
I like the boat, because I think if you take it onto land, the caravan just isn't going to cut it. I think there's something nice about a boat.
Giant tour bus.
It was also the escape from the catastrophe.
The
like,
isolation.
They got away from the virus. And it's that thing that even my wife would ask at zombie films. She's like, does anybody get on a boat? What would happen? Because can zombies swim? And I'm like, well, that's good ideas, because sometimes zombies just walk the bottom of the ocean. So she's like trying to come up with island ideas. And you know what? These are really good ideas that we never really see in zombie films. They kind of aim to get there, but that's always... And they never really get there. But I'd love to see a film set around that era, that aspect.
But
of
plus, like, where do you go? Like, you get on a boat and you're like, fine, we're on a boat, but like, you're gonna, you know, you're gonna run out of steam on the boat. You got to go somewhere.
I think that would be amazing conversations to have when you're building characters.
Yeah,
because it's a bunch of strangers that are all in fear and they're looking for help and leadership. And when people try to step up, they cut each other down, going, "No, we can't do that." And it's like, well, we can fish. Is the fish affected by this? Like, they're clueless. I think this is really good to build a conversation with. So whenever you take away somebody, the audience should be really interested in the characters and the situation, that when you start pulling people out, they don't expect it. And now they're really intrigued because it's like, oh no. And start doing Game of Thrones style, removing people that you really like.
Plus, no, but like with the 43, you know, characters, you do have that opportunity of actually being able to talk to every character and see every character.
Mm-hmm.
So you can actually like see into their lives and stuff and like see how they're coping with this tragedy, with this apocalypse or whatever it is, that's this virus that's taken over the world. So you can actually become like emotionally invested in, you know, each different story, like in a different family or a group of friends, or if there's like a loner or, you know, a group of people that kind of hang together.
It has to have a
celebrity. So when they start dropping
in
from there, like there's, that's to me is a good point. So that's something you gotta think about, Stephen, in your pitch.
Yeah, I think that a good thing for that is as well, like the common theme between everyone is they're all putting their head in the sand. Well, the opposite, they're putting into water, but it's you know, they're all hiding away from their problems.
You're loving the boat jokes and puns.
You're I haven't away, sunk but... yet. I don't think I have anyway. But yeah, so I think that's a nice common ground for everybody, that they all are running away from their problems, literally.
Yeah. Even like you can have so much fun with characters. Like I remember in the book World War Z, which is fantastic and I'd recommend reading it. There's a whole storyline of like a celebrity locked in and a bunch of other people locked in like a tower, like a fortified, I guess, palatio estate with zombies outside. And they're just so vapid and vacuous and horrible. Like they're empty souls themselves and they're surviving just because they built up their career that they actually can stay there.
Yeah.
Like that would be an amazing character to have on that boat. Like imagine a child asking this person for an autograph and going, "What do you need an autograph for?" Do you know, like when there's 43 people, why do you need an autograph? You know, like what is that for? Like what is that going to do? And like it just starts, like you have a great opportunity to question society in general when you've stripped it all down. And you also have a murder mystery as well.
I like it.
Awesome. Don't open up your checkbook just yet.
What do you got for me, kid?
Okay. So, for me, you were saying future, when we talked about the futuristic, I wanted to go way into the future, but...
Like 2019.
Yeah.
You
like,
want to see Shazam.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. I want to see The Rock play Black Adam. I'm thinking 100 years into the future, so 2116. Right now, we're all dealing with VR technology. It's a pretty new thing for us. You know, 360-degree cameras and, you know, slap your phone up to your eyes. It's like, it's really cool, you
catch know. Catch a Pokemon or two.
Yeah, that's it. It's like, I seen on Facebook the other day, one of the Mars shuttles had like a 360 view.
That was fantastic.
It's like,
amazing.
Yeah, it's like, this technology is fantastic. What is it going to be like in 100 years' time? But I'm thinking about now, if everybody starts using these cameras, and we're basically, without realizing it, we're documenting history for people in the future.
Okay.
So, we go 100 years into the future. We're looking at like a Trinity, like a alumni, like a really kind of high up kid in like a history.
Okay.
He's he's in his final year and he's following this murder case that happened in 2016.
Okay.
He's looking through the books, but he gets this idea, you know, it's like, I want to actually, what if I put on these VR glasses, went to the scenes of the crimes and tried to find clues. So he's being a detective in the future for a crime that happened 100 years ago, trying to solve a problem.
That's very good.
Okay. Now, I could go... I want to go further, but I'm afraid I'm going to ruin it. So...
Well, that's why with my pitch, I ended it with the opening of the whole story. What do you think of that? And then asked you guys, we're like, well, how else can we do it, you know?
So my story is really noir-based. You're following one person. It's not a group of people. It's just it's all about this one guy. So you really need to have an antagonist in the story. I'm thinking we need a copycat killer in the future, who was also following these crimes, but he was repeating them. So now you have a guy who is trying to solve, or like our protagonist, trying to solve a crime that happened 100 years ago, but now is also stepping upon evidence of things that are happening in his current time. is he going to be caught in the crossfire with like detectives, like when they're like in scenes, like his fingerprints are going to be around in places, you know, is there going to be
something? And that's,
like,
when you say fingerprints, that's in modern, like that's in his present era, 2116. He can't leave.
No, he can't leave. No, he can only see what happened in the past.
And he's a spectator.
Yeah.
The ghost of Christmas past, is it? Yeah, so, past, because he goes and watches himself.
So he's like Bran from Game of Thrones. He kind of just like walks into the past and like views things. It's pretty cool, I like it.
But you have a cool set of glasses and an iPhone 6.
Well, probably like an iPhone 6000, yeah.
It's really interesting because you're saying that pretty much every aspect of everybody has been filmed because that's how we live anymore. Yeah. So all he can do is jump into other people's cameras and get their point of view.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that way you'd have to specifically see, like, you know, maybe sees from one angle and you can have a pillar in the way of a killer. And it's like, I need to know who that is. But it maybe sees in the distance there's somebody else with just a phone and it's like they're on the phone. So it's like, oh, I can get the audio of that person.
And they're all videos as well. So like they're capturing moments in time so he can follow it. But of course, as soon as he gets so far, the video cuts out, you know. They're only 4 or 5 minutes long. Some are 10, you know. It's like they cut out at the worst possible time for him and he has to go delve further.
Excellent.
That's all I'm putting out there because it will get ruined otherwise.
That's a good pitch.
And as well, one thing
Is it a serial killer? Is it?
I'm thinking it's a serial killer.
That makes sense.
You told me a story about the World's Fair back in, what was it, like the...
Early 1910
or 1920s or something?
Yeah, it was definitely 1898 or so.
Yeah, and it was about... Well, you tell it because I'm paraphrasing everything you said.
There was H.H. Holmes. He was America's very first serial killer. So the Columbian Exposition, which is the Columbian Expo, was one of the biggest fairs ever. Like, they actually say this rivaled the Civil War in importance for America. So everybody started like descending onto the city that was hosting this carnival, like this fair, where they had like, they built pyramids and they had people from Egypt over. This is like late 1800s. Like, this is amazing stuff. It's also when cities were first becoming popular, like when people were actually congregating on such a high volume in a thing called a city. But it was really chaotic and like women were fearing for their safety because they'd go to the big city for a job and then they would be taken advantage of by creeps and weirdos. One creep and weirdo in particular went there, built a hotel, and he built this hotel with multiple different architects and people, so nobody really knew what the plan was except for him. It was basically a hotel of death where he could actually gas people's rooms, go in, take their body, put them down corpse chutes, and bring them to the basement and dissect them and do all the weird shit that he would do to them. Nobody knew about this until people started going missing. And it's really difficult for people to know who's gone missing because it's like, I'll see you later. And then they never send another letter again.
But as well, in that time, it was like hundreds of thousands of people were passing through, like strange, like people from all over America were passing through at that time.
Yeah, and they're recommending that they don't even know that how many people he killed realistically, but they're saying it could have been hundreds.
So when you said futuristic crime, that's what popped into my head, but it's like, take that crime, do it now. Would like sprinkle over a city maybe, and the guy investigating is from 100 years in the future.
So are you saying that nobody knew whether or not this was a serial killer?
Yeah, there was no proven, it was all hearsay basically.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, it's
okay,
all hearsay. So he is actually solving the case. No one was ever able to solve it, but so he gets the bright idea that I can go back in time with these VR glasses and I can actually solve these problems.
And he's not a cop.
He's a history major.
He's the student.
Yeah.
History I really student. Like that. That reminds me of...
No, just bear that in mind. He said that. So just take that into your final decision.
I know. I should be more confrontational. I should be so much more confrontational. I want to get more out of this idea, though. It's really interesting. So I really dig the no one ever was caught or nobody even... Like, there was a miscommunication between... whether or not there actually was a serial killer.
Yeah.
You can have a bunch of people. I think it's actually, when you said Trinity, were you talking about Dexter?
No, I was talking about like kind of like a university, like a massive campus.
Okay, because there's a Trinity killer in Dexter in one of the seasons where there's this, people were being killed for like decades and nobody really knew because the pattern was very specific and it was a Trinity killer. And Dexter found out about it. I find that really interesting. So I think that would be an element you can carve in going, well, people died, but nobody really could fit in that there is a reason why these people were being killed. There was a pattern that nobody really saw. Mm. And this guy, 100 years in the future, studying up as a history major, would find that connection and start looking it up.
Well, the thing about it as well for him is he has all the evidence. Like, the police at the time were doing it in real time. You know, they were doing it on the moment, like only getting fed little bits of evidence as they went along. Policemen retired. You know, they just got pushed to the files, you know, stacked in a corner somewhere.
Yeah.
Where he has all that information in front of him, he just needs to find it. You know, it's already happened. It's already 100 years old now at this stage.
So this would be Michael Cera, wouldn't it?
This would be.
With Viggo Mortensen as the killer.
Yeah. I just taken like some really cool moments with like his lecture. You know, he's going to like talk to his history lecturer about it, you know, like trying to get some information out of him. You know, what do you know about this time? There's nice conversations there. You know, those big auditoriums with just two people in at night time just chatting away, you know, over like dim light.
100 years ago, there was only 43 people on the boat. And they filmed everything.
And then when that all happens, and then at the end of the movie, the guys actually leave the lecture hall and they're on a boat. It's the same boat. They were the kids.
On a boat.
They were the kids.
That's really fascinating. I want to hear more about or kind of infiltrate a little bit more about the copycat killer in the future. Mm-hmm. I'm sure a studio head would as well want to know more about that, because that feels like that would be the...
That's the danger of the story.
That's the danger, yeah.
Because he can't kill himself if he's just looking into his phone, you know. He just get bad eyesight.
But it's great that he needed at one point to get the clues to unlock who this killer is in the past, because that might give him information as to the killer in the present. Yeah, and it'd be amazing that the killer of today
was the lecturer. He's been talking to him the whole time.
Well, I mean, you do have, and this is where the drama stuff of mysteries and noir I always find difficult, because I always kind of feel like it's cliched, but it's also satisfying. So if you have him going to the head of the dean. And he's denying it and saying, work on your studies.
Just imagine the dean from Community.
Like, don't distract yourself with that stuff. You have a class to teach, you know. But if he's the one who actually started doing the killings because he became fascinated by this work and trying to distance our Michael Cera character away from it, I think that'd be interesting. At the same time, that is a bit cliched. And if you watched it, you would know that, you would know that right away. But that's my difficulty when you come up with mysteries is how can you make it satisfying and also surprising? Because it's like a sports film. You can only really end it satisfying one way. You got to let the underdog win.
There's a massive difference between a twist and a lie.
Yeah.
You know, although it's a big difference, there's a very small little ground between the two of them.
Yeah. I'm interested to see, because like, obviously this person from 100 years ago isn't still alive. So... it's either that they were a complete nobody. Like, I need to know more about the story, because it's like,
you know, making a great
pitch. So it's like are they more like are they a known criminal? So like, is it petty crimes, or have they been done for, you know, assault before? Have they been arrested?
I could see.
So are they on record and stuff? So, you know, if this kid is like studying in college and he's watching these videos and he's finding these clues and he's getting closer to this person or these people, you know. Like, what happens then? What can be done about it? What can, you know, is it basically like justice in the end, you know, for the family's victim, or is it kind of is it resolution, or is it just proving the dean wrong? Is it, you know, a study that this kid then goes on to develop? You know, does he open up a school or this service that, you know, helps people to look into the past and look at these videos? You know, is it that kind of thing? Does he go into policing? You know, where does it go from there?
Funny you should say that. I just thought about it a second. great questions.
The result of kind of his studies, you know, if it's not, you know, on his curriculum or whatever in college, if it's just more of a hobby and something you got interest in. Like,
as far as the killer goes, I could see it being a guy who was convicted, but maybe convicted for one murder. But nothing else was found, you know. So the case is still wide open, like,
so,
you know,
cold cases. Then.
Yeah, basically, it's like that kind of Stephen Avery sort of style. It's like, did he do it? Did he not?
I actually think it's Stephen Avery. I was like, I was thinking to go back and find out who did that.
Yeah, exactly. Is that
it was Brendan Dassey.
Well, yeah. Maybe you can do it another way, like where Stephen Avery was convicted of the first crime, and then there was somebody else who looked like him who was out there still committing the crimes. Mm. So maybe that's how you go, like, somebody was arrested for one of those crimes, but they were continuing in different ways.
Yeah.
And that's what fascinates our young protagonist, is that I think they might have gotten the wrong guy. And the amount of lives that were ruined, because when they arrested Stephen Avery for the first one, where like it was like sexual assault, they locked him up. There was evidence that somebody actually found, there's another guy too, they didn't investigate it. That guy broke into some woman's house and like sexually assaulted her. And it's just disgusting, because if the police actually listened to the lead, that may never have happened to her. So that could be the gravity of a situation when you're dealing with the past, going, you arrested the wrong guy and the crimes kept going. So this person's obsessed with figuring out who it is, because this one person wrecked so many lives and no one knows who it is. And then it starts happening in present time as well. And he's like, is it because of me looking in the past? Or why is this happening? Or is somebody else found out about this ahead of time and recreating it? So now I have to look into the past in order to stop them.
It could be a case of you're either clearing a family's name, because like 100 years isn't really, and you could do it less.
Families, yeah, yes, that's,
you know,
that's,
you could do it less. You could do it like 60 or so. So you're like, yeah, a generation within the murders. You know, you're either clearing the name, or you're clearing the victim's name, or clearing the prisoner's name. Basically, the guy who was convicted of the crime. You know, his family's name. You know, it's all about the family, I suppose, in that case. But with the current copycat, you're also preventing the crimes of the present by figuring out what his next play is. It's all probably about getting one step ahead of the current criminal, the current like murderer, you know, the serial killer.
Yeah, so it's almost kind of like, is it Minority Report? Is that the one?
That, yeah,
where they kind of, yeah, you kind of get views from the future, yeah, and stuff, but not like, you, yeah, know, space agey and kind of magic powers,
preventing crimes before they happen.
Yeah, but this is kind of, yeah, okay.
The whole pace of the story could be like dealt with all of, oh my god, once Michael Cera, I can't believe he cast him.
Hey, it's your thing.
Once,
who would you actually cast?
Once up? Brad Pitt solves all the crimes. Once Michael Cera solves the first crime, he figures out that, or the second one, he figures out, oh my god, there's a copycat now. This story that I'm reading in like my digital newspaper is exactly the same as what happened before.
Mm.
So if I...
There could be a really nice scene too where he's sitting there and he reads pretty much the same
verbatim
murder,
yeah,
and he's like, what? And then looks it up again and like kind of looks at the dates where, yeah, it happened, like this year, mm, and starts seeing that there was killings like three times on the same day, same way. Like, that's an amazing scene that I, as an audience member, I'd be like, oh no, it's happening again. Mm.
So now for the third murder that he needs to solve it quicker than the current copycat is going to commit the crime. So, okay, he's on that race now to solve this murder that happened in the past,
mm-hmm,
to prevent the one that's going to happen in the present.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right. So, I think
That's as far as I'm going to go with it, because it will,
damn,
just get worse.
So, studio head.
Yeah, studio head, Mr. Rutan.
You, Mr. Moneybags himself. You can choose one.
After listening to both pitches. Thank you both for your pitches. They're very interesting. It's a hard choice. I wish I didn't have to pick. While both of you are just sitting across the table staring at me. You're smiling at me, but like behind your teeth, as if to say, pick.
I'll look
story,
away and I'll look at my 4-month-old baby boy.
I'll tell you what.
I need money for.
I'll tell you what.
My nappies. And
there's,
I will look at my big mound of cocaine, which I need to feed my habit.
I'll tell you what. I mean, like, I love both ideas. I'll tell you what I like about both of them.
That would be amazing.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
I'll make it really simple. Chris, what I love about your story is that classic, you know, who did it? You know, there's the apocalypse kind of thing, the virus thing, and isolation and containment all in one.
Yeah.
So you start off with, you know, 50, 43 people. And, you know, at the beginning of the film, you could be watching it and you could end up with one, or, you know, you could end up with 30. You don't know. You need the crime to be solved. You need the disaster to be stopped before the end of the film. You know, does our hero die? You know, who dies?
Yeah.
You know, who doesn't die, and how to stop it, you know, when you're stuck on this ship. So I was excited listening to it, and I want to see it, and I want to know who did it, and I want to know why. I want to know the motives.
Mm-hmm.
Steve, what I liked about your idea is sort of what kind of has to do with the idea that I had in my head for a film before. It's this digital age and the technology and what's actually capable, and it's much more futuristic. What I like about it is not the predictability, but what am I trying to say?
He's lost for words already.
Him, you're saying with the copycat and him racing the murderer or racing these people to the point of the murder, and the idea that he might compromise a victim, that he might compromise the outcome of a murder, that someone else might get killed or something like that. That's what interests me. So if I knew more about that story, that might lead me to pick your story.
Oh, I don't like where this is going.
But if I knew more about your story, Chris, as in, you know, what is this virus? You know, what was the motivation? What was the idea of getting on a boat, kind of where they're going? You know, where does it end? Would make me pick more of that. So I'm literally stuck in this kind of limbo where it's like, I love both of these ideas, but I do have to pick one.
Yeah.
And I am going to go with Steve's idea.
Oh, yes,
I
no.
do. I'm sorry, but I do. I just really like, the idea of this futuristic, but going back to modern time. Well, going back in the past, but it's set in modern day for us. So we're looking at the world as we see it now, but seen from the eyes of 100 years in the future or 50 years in the future. And what could be, you know, future crime detecting and policing and case solving.
You only picked that because you just highlighted it was one of my ideas. So it was closer to your idea.
I'll get.
Episode one, sour grapes already.
No, you know, screw this. Seriously.
Just write down that 15 million in that checkbook and that'll cover costs.
Well, like, I had to pick one. I mean,
you gotta tell that to my baby. You gotta tell my crying baby why he's not getting nappies.
He's wearing a daddy's wrapping a towel around his ass.
Let me just get my checkbook. Let me just there's your imaginary check for five quid, you know, go buy yourself a pint. No, it was a tough choice. I loved the classical you know, the Cluedo kind of, you know, the who did it thing.
Wasn't That's really the future though, was it?
I don't know what it is.
Both apocalyptic.
It is. It's
it's the future because there's
it's the future because
it's not it's not it's
it didn't happen in the past.
It's going to become the future. It'll become the future, you know?
Yeah.
But no, that kind of, it did kind of get me right away from the start, your idea, Steve. I did like it.
It's amazing when you come up with when you're taking a dump, isn't it?
Seriously. It's funny though when we did this, because it's the first time where you sit there and try to come up with a few different scenarios. And there was one I was actually really leaning towards for a while. And then I kind of switched it the last minute. Well, not the last minute, but I switched it like yesterday. And if you ever hear Red Harvest, it's like the very first noir book, categorized as the first noir book. It was it was done again as Last Man Standing with Bruce Willis, where a loner individual goes to a town and there's these two rival gangs and he starts working with both of them, pitting them against each other.
Yeah.
I was like, well, that would be really interesting in the future if you actually had somebody wash up in town, but then you really have to build that new world, and I think that's really difficult in a pitch to build a new world. But I had this idea, what I loved would be, you have your classic femme fatale and she's playing with the protagonist, so he's not quite sure who is right in this dispute, and I think in the end he needs to do something that he believes is right for the people that he thinks is a worthy cause. But the ending I had, which was I thought was interesting, was that somehow, because of his actions, the group that he thought he was helping, turns out they are more villainous and they've actually sterilized all the women of the other group. So it's like, well, your community will never have children ever again. So that's just eradicating them completely in this really heinous, cold-blooded way. But I was going, how can I build that as a pitch? So I decided to go with a more classic approach.
Mm.
But I think it's really fascinating, though, like how many different ideas you have. And I realize now that we actually have to hear the studio head's idea.
Yeah, Mr.
What?
Mr. Studio Head.
Mr. Studio Head.
Mr. Moneybags himself.
My ideas, honestly, are not as well thought out and as creative as either of yours. So if you would be so kind as to kind of help me and inspire maybe the idea as I'm kind of telling it to you.
You got it.
basically, it's sort of on the lines with Stevie's idea, which probably why I kind of gravitated towards yours more. Basically, like the word
the world shenanigans.
He paid me before I got here.
I'm gonna go back into the past looking at video footage of you guys collaborating and handing bags of money to each other.
Delete that WhatsApp group quickly. Delete it.
Chris may have met me off the train, but I was actually talking to Stevie the whole time and he was telling me lots of sweet secrets.
No, we're doing it through VR technology.
Basically, like we're living in an age now where like everything is becoming digital.
Yeah.
Like online profiles. Nearly everyone has a social media profile, a Facebook, and everyone has a mobile number. But also everyone has like a home address and like postal addresses and stuff like that. But you contact people through WhatsApp, you contact people through Skype.
Yeah.
So the idea that everyone becomes listed online. So however far in the future we are, it's kind of like not a requirement, but it's just all of your information is online. So your birth cert becomes a digital file.
Yeah.
You know, your death certs become digital files. And, you know, so, you know, there's no more kind of flipping through folders to find personal records or anything like that.
There's such thing as folders.
Exactly. No. What's a folder? What's paper? You know, everything is on the computer. Everything is in the system.
I still like how they use a floppy disk as an image on computers. And it's like, people don't know what that is.
There's going to be, there are kids probably these days kind of going, what is that thing? You know, it is a save file. It's a floppy disk. The same way, you know, people say, why do you hang up the phone? Because you're just hanging a wall.
Yeah.
But there you go. So there's the idea. How do you not exist in a world where everything requires login information, requires your email? You know, like everyone has like a Gmail account or a Hotmail account.
Yeah. Well, you get a new job now, you have to add your email address.
Well, they like your Google account is attached to your YouTube, and then your Google Plus profile, which is doing great at the moment. I don't know anyone that uses Google Plus, but everyone uses
Google employees.
Google employees. Apologies to any Google employees that listen. But everything is connected. You know, I mean, I've got my phone number on my Gmail, and you know, I use WhatsApp, I use Facebook, and that's connected to my
so
email.
Everything you do now is digital.
Everything is connected.
Okay.
So how would, and then the idea I've got from this is I was rewatching Breaking Bad recently. You've both seen it.
Yes.
One of the characters, Saul, he knows a guy who knows a guy who knows a guy that knows a guy.
Okay.
And basically, you know, he gets you.
Get you a new identity, basically.
Get you a new identity. So how do you get a new identity in a world where everything already exists online from day one? If you were born into a world and your date of birth is, you know, written and set and done, and then, you know, your Facebook profile is given to you by, you know, President Zuckerberg, you know, and then everything you do is tracked, you know. So if you're in this world where everything is being recorded, how do you escape that? How do you not exist on this cloud grid?
Really,
so if this crime is being committed in the world, like, so the idea is like there's a set of criminals that don't really exist on this grid. So it's not necessarily, I don't know how they would exist.
You're doing Avon Barksdale,
that's
basically.
What I can, you know, like it's that kind of stuff where it's, you know, these are unknown criminals. Why don't we have their birth cert? Oh, well, there's just there must have been a glitch or whatever. It didn't, you know, he took the floppy disk, he took the USB key out without, you know, formatting it beforehand. So there could be little glitches and stuff in people's files where it's like, well, actually, no, we can't say that's official because, you know, there's not an official stamp from anything. You know, if you have a form and say, well, that wasn't stamped by the Garda station or that wasn't stamped by this person, so it's not official. So, you know, it becomes like a hacking thing as well. So people are, you know, changing their information. So if there's a group of criminals that don't exist in this grid.
Yeah.
So, and then a detective is set on course to find who's committing these crimes. You know, this...
Would
this
he be going undercover, would he?
But perhaps? How do you... So that's the thing. It's like, it's finding...
You need to learn how they do it in order to stop them.
It's finding these connections.
And in order to stop them, he's got to himself get off the grid.
Yeah.
There's always going to be a digital fingerprint somewhere down the line, whether you're buying something or whatever. So maybe it's like a transaction that happens, like, you know, a simple like buying milk in the shop, like a criminal or someone who's not registered in the whole future. So, you know, they don't have, you maybe you have to register, you know, your birth cert has to be up there. And if that doesn't happen, then, and you leave like your digital fingerprint somewhere, there's already a hunter after you. Like, so your detective is already assigned to go find this person.
Yeah.
And I mean, that could be a cool like manhunt kind of...
Because it is already a kind of thing where you're like you use your bank card in a foreign country you know, and you'll get your car can be blocked because they're like, there's suspicious activity, it's being used in a foreign country. If you don't say, you know, I'm going to Las Vegas for 2-3 weeks, they'd be like, your car's being used over here and it's never been used there before, so they could cancel it. So you're definitely being tracked.
I think it's interesting. I think I'd actually be more interested in that concept. I wouldn't really want to see the detective looking at the gang.
It's how the gang...
I'd rather look at a fugitive style where a guy is framed for committing a crime and has to go on the run and has to like get off the grid and can't. And now he has to literally disappear in a world where you can't disappear. And he has to solve the crime while he's under wraps. And it's so impossible to be under wraps because everything is documented. Everything you do, if you even touch like the bus pole, your fingerprint is acknowledged. So I think that would be, just for me personally, I'd be more interested in that, because that would be, as an audience member, going through it with the gang rather than somebody's doing something more interesting and somebody else is trying to
stop
them.
Okay, yeah, there you go. No, true. But that's, you know, this is why I wanted to bring the idea to you guys, because I just think it's an interesting concept of escaping. You know, everyone kind of goes, oh, I'm going to shut down Facebook for a week, or I'm not going to use this, I'm not going to use that. But how do you literally do that? You know, like in this fictional world where everything is on a computer, everything is...
Trapped. What if you set the whole movie up with your idea? You know, it's like a detective is sent out after unassigned criminals. Like, you know, we don't know who they are. He's sent out there to look for them.
Michael Cera.
Yes, of course. You know, he's the Bradley Whitford of this episode. So that happens. So that's your first 20 minutes or 30 minutes of the movie. You know, you're setting up the rules of the universe that you're in.
Yeah.
The detective finds these criminals that he's looking for, but he's overwhelmed. He's Robocoped, basically. He's shot. He's nearly
Biker
killed.
Gang.
Yeah. He's basically left.
They're off the grid, but they're so loud with their bikes.
He's left for dead, but one of the criminals is super safe. He's super careful. He doesn't leave any tread whatsoever, like of his existence. And he stops his fellow criminals from killing this detective. He's like, no, if you kill a cop or a detective, that's it. It's game over. There will everybody be looking for us. We'll do something better. We'll delete him. So they delete his record. So then he becomes hunted then as well. And he's injured. So the only way for him to basically to free himself, to get his name back on the list, you know, of being an assigned civilian, a citizen of the world, is to find the people who nearly killed him while he's being chased as well. Okay. Kind of like the Fugitive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? That kind of
also
stuff.
That was on the other day and I was like, that's a great film.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, I think my dad
was it a great film or was it on?
Was it? Well, it's just surprising to hear it was on.
Well, I think it was on
IRT. With Netflix and streaming, like,
it was on?
Everything's always on. It's just like,
everything is just paused on until you play.
Was there commercials in between?
No, see, you cut him off. He said that it was on. The mad.
Online. But there you go. No, there's another thing. I mean, I sat down to watch television the other day and there was ads. You know, that's terrible.
Yeah.
That's a different Dave. Anyone.
So that does sound interesting. I think that basically what we're saying is, if you did Fugitive in the future, which I think I would love to just do an episode on that, because that would be fantastic. That'd be really fun to kind of explore. In the Fugitive, like, he escapes by brilliantly putting on a hat and going into a St. Patrick's Day parade.
Yeah.
But it's like, imagine exploring that in a future sense.
Do you know, in
like
a future
Minority
sense,
Report.
In a future sense, what you do? No, instead of wearing a hat, you know, everyone has
instead of wearing a
hat. Everyone has Snapchat, right? And what you can do on Snapchat now is it puts this filter on your face, and there's like a new feature where you can kind of like scroll into the bottom, and it takes images from your camera roll, like pictures of people. So if I took a picture of both of your faces, I could show you right now that I go into Snapchat and I point it at my face, and it would put your face over mine.
That
already
stuff.
Exists, so that could be something. There is,
I
know,
I thought
idea.
You're gonna say you're gonna put a filter over Chris's face and make him look like Groucho Marx. We're looking for this man.
But you know what I mean. But then you know, if you're saying, if you want to frame someone, you could, you know, it's simple. It's a simple anyway to edit footage. But if something everyone has on their phone is to change how their face looks, and if that's
I've been
where
reading
we're at now.
Superior Spider-Man recently. Do you know? Do you follow comic books yourself?
No,
now?
Actually, I don't read.
It's. I was going to tell Stevie this. It's actually one of the best runs.
This is Doc Ock, basically,
yeah. It is one of the best runs of a comic book I've read in years. Like, it's so interesting. And it shouldn't be, because it's absurd. Dr. Octopus takes over Peter Parker's brain. So now it's Dr. Octopus as Spider-Man.
Oh, crap.
And they do have elements which I do, I always find clunky, but that's just me, where Peter Parker's inside his brain trying to, like, free his psyche. That stuff I'm not as interested in as just watching Dr. Octopus, a villain, start to become a hero, but uses, like, really harsh tactics. And one of them is, he's like, Spider-Man isn't doing this properly. Like, he's actually going from place to place stopping criminals. So he gets spider bots, these little spider, robotic spiders, and covers the entire town with it. Covers New York City. So if there's a crime being committed, he's watching, and they're everywhere. But then Green Goblin, one of the other villains, doesn't know that Doc Ock is Spider-Man. He just thinks, Spider-Man, I hate him. He gets one of those spider bots, and he messes with it so that it does not register a goblin face. Ah. So at one point, Peter Parker is like, Spider-Man's like, I've eradicated all crime in the city. And that's when Green Goblin just destroys the city, and they call it Goblin Nation, where, like, it's just a cataclysmic assault on the city. And Spider-Man's like, how? My spider bots aren't doing anything. I'm supposed to be surveilling. Like, it should tell me this. And it doesn't, because he modified the spider bot. So I think it's kind of interesting, because he found a way to be invisible in this new Spider-Man New York, where everything is visible. And I definitely recommend reading it, because I'm not even halfway through it yet, and I'm just flipping the page going, that's amazing.
I love how we got the brief of, we're going to do a futuristic detective noir style movie, and we've three of us come up with completely different things.
I agree.
Yeah, like, you feel so, like, different. You feel like, you know, oh well, you've kind of narrowed it down, so it's going to be, you know, there's going to be just like one way going. Yeah. You had your classics, you had your kind of futuristic, and then you had my stupid idea.
Oh. Well, that's why you're the studio head, because you're going to fund stupid ideas.
I just have lots of money, and I give
you write checkbooks, not scripts.
Yes. I think that's a paraphrasing P. Diddy. I write checks, I don't write script lines. I write checks or something.
Huh? Is it P. Diddy now? Because I don't know.
I think he's back to
He was on Raw last week, and he was Combs James or Daddy James.
Sean Puffy Combs.
Sean Puffy Combs.
No, Sean Puff Daddy knows? Combs.
Yeah.
Who cares?
No, but you're right, though. We did come up with a few different ideas. Like, when we originally had the idea to do this new segment, which we'll do again and again, like, I just think it's really interesting to kind of mix up the style of our show. But then it was like, okay, what's the first episode? We felt like we owed the audience an original before we went straight back into, like, superhero reboots, which we can't wait to get back into.
So good. Yeah.
We had an embargo on for the last couple of months, and it's like, it's lifted now.
Yeah. But then it's like, okay, what are we going to do? And I was thinking, well, we have to be specific and also a bit vague. Like, if we turn around and said, we're doing a basketball film, then we would come up with pretty much the same idea, right? With Mighty Ducks on the court, you know?
That's hockey. That's a terrible analogy.
No, it is. No, it's Mighty Ducks on the court.
Okay. Not the rink. Okay.
Yeah. No, because it's really difficult to come up with
this. This is what I said with you, is like, let's pick a genre and a situation. They're the two kind of things that we go for, and that's our brief. So it was a crime, noir kind of, that was the genre, and the situation was future.
Yeah, and then you can literally do what you want. Yeah. So the reason I told you the second idea was, it was completely different to the what I went with. Yeah, or my first idea.
Should have went with the second one.
No, but, like, it's also funny, because when you're dealing with stuff like the future, and you want to deal with it as a pitch, you know? Mm. And you want to be able to convey your idea to people. And it is really tough if you're dealing with, you have to set up a new world. Because how do you pitch Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
You know, like, you have to explain everything. Like, so even watching the first episode,
Kings is like England, so you have the North and the South.
It looks
and
like
there's Dixon, and there's like there's rival families going at each other, like, constantly killing each other. And there's Dixon, and there's that's all.
No,
it
it's true. But once you get past the dynamics of the communities battling for lordship on one throne, then you're like, oh, and there's dragons, and you're like, okay, oh, so sorry, the dragons. You're like. And then you have people up north at a wall because, you know what, they're zombies. And you're like, well, hold on, they're zombies? You know,
zombies? No, ice zombies.
It actually reminds me of Jerry Seinfeld when we talked about wrestling. Jerry Seinfeld was saying once that if wrestling didn't exist now, do you think you could pitch that as an idea and people would buy into it? Because it evolved into what it is.
Yeah.
But you can't pitch. You're going to have two big sweaty guys naked pretending to fight each other.
Yeah.
Because that just doesn't sound appealing.
And then a smaller guy comes out with a chair and hits him over the head, and he's unconscious. Even though he's wrestled for like 20 minutes before that. You know what I mean? Dropped on his head 15 times. It's a little plastic chair that knocks him out.
So I think that also can apply to high concept stuff. Like Game of Thrones is high concept. And I'm amazed that they actually got to pitch that, because part of the fun of it is the dynamics within the families and the communities. But the dragons and the zombies just come out of fucking nowhere. Yeah. And you're like, oh God. I remember when I watched it, I saw the dragon. I'm like, oh, we're doing dragons now? Then there was like this woman witch who kind of became a ghost and killed
the guy. She gave birth to this, like, Melisandre. She gave birth to this, I don't know, black shadow fucking thing.
I really wish you were being filmed, because you're actually just pushing it out of your vagina. You're just kind of like, it's like a magician rope pull.
When you're over the sink, like, and you're kind of like, you know, drying up your hands. I was just doing that, yeah. But like, there's you watch it and you're like, cool, war, battles, and then dragons, zombies, shadowy monsters, fucking killing people.
That nearly wrecked me though when I saw that. I was like, oh, come on. Like, yeah. I need to know. I talked to you earlier. Rules here. I need to know the rules. And I was like, if I knew that she can do that, why can't she do that and kill Joffrey or whatever, you know? Yeah. So there are times where I was like, it's really difficult.
It's like we've talked about Lord of the Rings plenty of times, about the whole the eagles, why didn't just fly straight to Mordor? And then Chris comes up with the whole thing, why didn't just put the ring back? It was fine where it was for those like 500 years. Why just leave it alone?
Fuck, man.
Just give it to somebody, have him hide it, and then when he comes back, kill him.
or another rule that just gets broken. In Harry Potter, you were saying earlier, you know, you don't understand the rules. Like sometimes we just can use magic without wands. But like in the third book and the third film, The Prisoner of Azkaban, Hermione gets given this little time traveling device that she uses to go to school. So why can't they like use that and go back in time and just kill Voldemort?
Why don't you use it once?
Yeah, no, I mean,
do you know what I mean? It's like, why can't you use that to kind of go back and stop anyone from dying? Anyone that's died, and then anyone that dies in the future film.
That's it.
Well, yeah. You know,
it is just kind of just
forget about us. Like,
science fiction,
only...
which ties into future crime and stuff like that. Like Looper, we've had many conversations, myself and Stevie, about Looper, where like you set up the rules about how you send people back in time to be killed because you can't kill people in the future, except if you're a Chinese woman, I suppose.
And Bruce Willis's wife.
Yeah, Bruce Willis was married to a Chinese woman. She was killed in the future. So they brought him back to throw him into the past to be killed. And they burned down the house to hide the evidence.
Yeah.
Be like, I thought you're not supposed to kill people in the future. That's why you send them back in time. I'm like, you made these rules. I didn't. Why did you break it immediately?
Well, they can't send houses back in time.
But like, then you just said, like, why don't you send her body back in time? They don't. Like, they're just like, just burning the house down. It's like an accident. Is it? Do we need time travel then? If we've got gasoline?
Second. Did you not say there was no matches as well in the future? I'm pretty sure they said no matches. So one thing that I will say though for Chris's pitch, opposed to mine, is you could have pitched yours in an elevator far easier than I could have. So I probably would have stood a better chance of getting made. You probably need like 4 floors where I need like 60. You know, I needed a skyscraper. You know, I'm hoping that Noel was in the penthouse. You know?
He's like ground floor. He's going to the third floor and you just press top floor.
So VR technology, that's what we're going for.
The elevator. Oh, looks like we're going to be stuck here for a while.
So we've established the peak corner. Now let me get to my pitch.
It's the peak. It's the pitch corner.
And you're heavily asking them for more advice on your story. And then, where do I go from here?
Okay, so I think that's
thankfully,
it.
Thankfully, I take the stairs.
Yeah, I think... I think that's kind of a wrap on the story pitch battle.
Yeah, one thing that we're going to need from you guys at home is we are going to need for our next pitch will be a genre or some sort of strange stipulation in a story that you want us to pitch. Also, we're going to need a forfeit. I think for whoever wins the most out of like 10 pitches or whatever, myself or Chris, whoever loses will do a forfeit. Tell us what that forfeit should be. I think the winner should have an episode dedicated to their pitch.
Yeah, that makes sense. And the loser has to do something embarrassing that we put on YouTube.
Yeah.
Okay.
That stays there forever.
And I'm down one already.
I'm delighted because I can't lose.
Also, I think next week we should probably do a reboot version of this, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So we pick an idea and then we pick a film franchise that exists. And we have to go off and come up with our version of it, which is probably, I think, in a way, a little more suited towards pitch battles.
Like, yeah.
Is actually going, okay, you're going to have to do...
Yeah, what would you do to fix the film?
Okay, we're doing League of Their Own again. How would you do it?
All men.
Oh, well, I'm excited to hear that. I'm looking forward to this one.
Tom Hanks is still in it.
All right, guys, you can hit us up on Facebook / Storybreakers. At Storybreakers on Twitter or storybreakers@gmail.com. Send us in an audio pitch or just write it down, whatever.
Absolutely. Thank you to Niall Bruton, actor, voiceover specialist, the one and only narrator of Storybreakers live readings.
No, where can we find you if people want to access your material? Because you have some funny ass videos online.
Oh, well, you and can impressions. Find me on, you can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Instagram, and you can find me on YouTube.
Awesome. Can you give us we'll link it in the description below.
Yeah, give us the description, but use a Star Wars character's voice to do it.
Oh.
I want to put him on the spot.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
that's Anakin.
Worst Jar Jar ever.
I'm on the spot here.
You are on the spot. Thing. Do you want me to suggest one?
Yeah, go.
Okay, I want Chewbacca. Is that app or
slash?
Okay, excellent. Thank you so much, Niall. We loved your pitch and. You guys will probably be hearing him next time when we're doing our November live reading of Alien 3, The Wooden Planet, by Vincent Ward.
Awesome, guys. We'll talk to you next week.
Arrivederci. Say goodbye, now.
Bonsoir. Bonsoir, eh? That's what they say in French.